This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Welcome to Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting live from Toronto for tonight's show. That's it.
Interesting rhythm of that introduction.
Oh, was it different?
Well, yeah, just a nice little dramatic pause there.
I'm slowly regaining my voice.
Much better. Much better, I hear.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm actually going to the doctor's this week because it was just hitting. This weekend was, I had to battle. I had to battle through it.
I'll bet. Did you didn't have to speak much this weekend, did you?
I had to go to a wedding, but I didn't have to speak at the wedding. So that was I don't know if I would have, my voice would have held up for a speech.
Well,
but,
imagine if you had to give it. Yeah, that would have been awful.
Yeah. I have to do a speech at a wedding in, not in the near future. It's a ways off, but yes.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. I have been hired to, speak some words.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. How was your weekend?
It was great. I had a really good weekend. Yeah,
I did too. I had a really great weekend.
Yeah, despite the rain. I mean, you know, it wasn't.
I got caught in the rain, dude. The rain stopped. I'm like, okay, here's my chance. And I had to run to the store, and the midpoint, it just starts, and I was like, do I turn around and go home? I'm already soaked, so I might as well go the full way and get what I was out to get, and then come home, and I'm. It was just I looked ridiculous, like I had been hit by a typhoon.
But who's looking at you? You
know, everybody. People were honking in their cars. They were throwing stuff
wet
at
guy.
Me.
Breaking news.
Soaking mother.
man gets wet.
Man wet. No umbrella.
I mean, once you realize, like, it's water, you know, like, literally, what's the big deal? It could be a little uncomfortable for your feet.
Rain's a little gross. Like, I wouldn't like recommend you like drink it. You know what I mean?
Well, nobody's telling you to drink it.
You know what I watched the other day? Sometimes God knows what the algorithm is sending you on YouTube, but the stuff that pops up for me, it's this dude from June of 1990. Just randomly walking the streets of Toronto. This is 1990, so I imagine he had to have like the world's first camcorder. Mm-hmm. And I imagine like this would have been the most boring video in 1990 to show someone. Yeah. But in 2024, man, this guy's got like hundreds of thousands of hits. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, I should do this now. And then this, by the time it's like 2060. Mm-hmm. It won't matter because people can travel back to 2024 and they won't need to watch videos of it. So
that's
maybe,
it.
Yeah. But it's the investment. Like the thought of this home video that I will one day need to digitize, and hopefully there's a service that I could make money off of this thing. I mean, the chips just really. Did you lose me?
I might have lost you. Might have been a bit of a breaking up. Sorry, it was a wonderful story too. I'm almost disappointed. Where were you? Please finish. What were you?
I don't know. We were talking about 1990. Do you have any memories of 1990?
I have none at all. I think I was just a year into this country, so I barely remember anything. But yeah, like it's not really going to be any sort of novelty to see like footage of anything from 2024, because there's probably too much of it. If anything, I think the novelty will be not seeing, like turning a screen off. Maybe we'll have perfected that in 24 years.
Well, what we have perfected is one of the best live shows you are ever going to experience on Saturday, July the 6th. It is the Cash-In. Poison Rana, post-wrestling, coming together the day of Money in the Bank here in Toronto. We have secured the rights to the CN Tower footage that all Toronto events are based around, and we will be presenting the Cash-In. Tickets are out now, but we now have a special announcement to make for this show, because as part of your ticket, when you arrive, it's a 2 p.m. start time, and kicking things off for the first hour or so, we are going to be doing a panel, The State of Wrestling Media. Could you think of a better way to spend your Saturday afternoon at Yuck Yucks then with myself and Wei Ting, joined by the esteemed members of the wrestling press, including Stephanie Chase, Brandon Thurston, and a man who is flying all the way over for the Cash-In, Benno. He is coming overseas, because no matter what currency, we are going to be breaking things down at the Cash-In. And really, who else to break down the financial details of the Cash-In than Brandon Thurston? So the five of us will be doing a panel chat. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting topics in wrestling media, and we will open it to the floor for questions as well. But these are three people I thought of immediately and thought this will be a great chance to do a panel with all of us in one room together. And you can join us on Saturday, July the 6th. Tickets available. postwrestling.com/live. We will kick off with the panel, but that's not all, Wei, because we have plenty planned that day.
Yeah, a lot. We are looking forward to, first of all, seeing all of you guys. It's our chance to kind of hang out with all of our listeners, one of the few times of the entire year where we get to do that. But secondly, Poison Rana has a lot of games lined up, and maybe even some participation in improv from your favorite post-wrestling hosts, and maybe even some other special guests. So I'm very much looking forward to this, including this panel that you got lined up.
Yes, looking forward to it a lot. So again, that is Saturday, July the 6th, the day of Money in the Bank at the Scotiabank Arena. Yuck Yucks is located at 240 Richmond Street West, which is about a 10-15 minute walk to the arena, right in the middle of the entertainment district. So we hope to see many of you out there on the 6th. And again, grab your tickets now at postwrestling.com/live. We hope to see many of you out there in a couple of weeks' time. This week on the site, we have a lot coming your Wei, and we had announced that we are doing our Who Killed WCW series with the revival of the Double Shot. So when we initially planned this, it was going to go as a doubleheader on Wednesday nights after Dynamite. However, because of our ability to watch this episode and record our thoughts instantaneously, you will be getting our shows with the Double Shot every Tuesday for the next 3 weeks, 11 p.m. Eastern time. As soon as the episode ends, just update your podcast app of choice with the Post Wrestling Cafe access that you have, and you will have our thoughts coming your Wei. So 11 p.m. Eastern, look out for that on Tuesday night as we chat about episode 2, which is when the decline starts to be, it starts to unravel, and we start to play the blame game, and boy, are there going to be some... I think a lot more talking points coming out of episode 2 than episode 1. That's going to be my prediction. And for anyone curious, Bret Hart and Bill Goldberg, they will each give their account of what happened in that match at Starrcade 1999.
That's this episode. Okay.
Excellent. Yeah, that's this episode.
Yeah, we will be chatting about it. And some of you might be watching it live on Vice TV if you have access to it. If you choose to watch it sometime in the archive afterwards, it is available. Our podcast, our review, our thoughts, as soon as Wednesday morning, Tuesday night, whenever you choose to get to it.
So again, access at postwrestlingcafe.com. You also have, from this past weekend, a Dominion review, Collision Course, and later this Thursday, the Ask Away mailbag show for Cafe members. You can still submit your questions at forum.postwrestling.com. We need your questions by Thursday afternoon, and then send those to us or memo.fm/postwrestling. If you want to hear your voice, it's free to submit questions either in written form or audio. We get to all of them, and that will be released on Friday. So look out for that, and fingers crossed that we're going to have an afternoon SmackDown to watch, but we'll be back at the normal time Friday night before Clash at the Castle.
And this Thursday on MCU Later, it is Rich Fan W.H. Park and a special guest talking about X-Men The Last Stand, perhaps the greatest comic book movie of all time, says nobody. I'm very much looking forward to this one.
Have you seen this movie?
Of course I have. I've seen them all, and I refuse to ever watch it again.
Wow. I watched this before Raw.
And what did you think? I quit. You probably liked it. And I
didn't mind it, dude. Oh, I didn't mind it.
You know what? Like, it benefits somebody who doesn't have the attachment to the X-Men that a fan like me does.
Let me put it this way. I thought Magneto, I thought Ian McKellen was awesome in this one. Like, he is the total, like, rogue cult leader, and he's in his element. Pardon the pun, in this movie.
Interesting. Okay. Well, there are definitely defenders of X3, The Last Stand, out there. Are Rich Fan WH among them?
Was this designed to be the end of the series? Was there always the plan to continue past this?
I don't believe so. I mean, okay, you're probably talking about a lot of contracts that were up, but I don't actually know the entire story. But when you watch the movie, you certainly...
I mean, the way they end it, you certainly feel that they're moving forward with this, but... Anyway, okay, well, that's on MCU later on this week. Whole schedule can be found at postwrestling.com. Free shows, cafe shows, all to your listening pleasure. But we have a bunch of news items. We're going to start off with Trevor Mann, a.k.a. Ricochet, who met his demise on tonight's episode of Raw. And
he is alive. They did not kill him off. We saw the thumbs up. The state of his internal injuries, we don't know. But last we saw him on camera, the man was... conscious and alive.
Here is the question posed to Wei Ting. Where was that ambulance taking Ricochet to?
Oh, okay. Does he have a non-compete?
Contract's up, and that contract's would mean, he could show that would up mean as no, no compete.
He could show up as soon as Wednesday, you're saying?
If we don't know exactly when the deal is up, but when a deal is up, there is no 90-day no compete attached to that. That's when the company makes the decision to cut you. So once that deal is up, in theory, he would be ready to go instantaneously whenever that deal expires.
Yeah, I think he's AEW bound personally. And I think that means if you're AEW bound, you're likely AEW and New Japan bound. And that probably means Forbidden Door would be a perfect place for him to show up.
Yeah, I think, first of all, it was Fightful and PW Insider that had reported this over the weekend, that it looked as though he was looking to be exiting. And then PW Insider with the update that tonight was designed to be his final night with the company. There were no plans beyond tonight for Ricochet. Of course, if, you know, some deal last minute comes together, I guess that's there's always a shred of possibility, but the way things have been planned out, you would think that this is probably a swan song for WWE. And for him, like, this is probably a very important time in his career with this deal coming due. Number one, he's 35 years old, so by no means is he on the back end of his career, but you want to be looking at these, you know, for his style especially, that, you know, you want to be he was going to get great offers no matter where we went. But I would be curious of how he viewed Will Ospreay's moves, not just over the past couple of months, but over these last number of years, where he has to have been looking at the idea that, you know, here he is in WWE, very well compensated and in a good position, but never in a key position in the company, and having to look at, like, this guy to me is a generational performer when it comes to what this guy can do athletically, that few, if any, can match him. And I think that he's probably looking at the fact that, man, I could make a ton of money and be regarded as one of the best wrestlers in the world, which I don't know if Ricochet's name comes up in that, but I'm sure that the money is going to be comparable wherever he decides. There's not really a bad option for him financially. New Japan's interesting because they're not in a great state at the moment when it comes to foreigners coming in, but certainly if they can make that work, AEW can carve that out for him and be another outlet for him.
Yeah, I imagine somebody like him to get the sort of John Moxley Hall Pass, you know, the, I guess at this point, who else kind of has that, enjoys that sort of a freedom? Bryan Danielson, you know, he's somebody that I think will be in demand with that entire network of places. Yeah, I'm actually pretty surprised and somewhat impressed by a move like this because, I could have seen him being a Dolph Ziggler type, you know, the type that just kind of rides this whole thing out until they get rid of him. I'm happy to just, you know, sit in catering and collect that paycheck, work your speed matches, work your main event matches, what have you. His stock had been improving in recent weeks, but I really do feel like the damage has been sort of been done through years of like this guy being portrayed as just happy to be there. You know, he's a guy who's just kind of like a perennial mid-carder. And I think any serious attempts to push him into a main event spot, you know, might have been met with like some anticipation just for the quality of match. But I don't think anybody was ever going to take him seriously as a title contender without a lot of work put in. And the question for him is, is WWE willing to put that work in? I don't know what they are promising him, what they're offering him to try to get him to stay. But I really do admire that he's willing to kind of step out of this comfort zone and enter a relative unknown. This contract at 35 is going to be, should be the most lucrative contract of his career, of course, but also it's the point in his life where he can guarantee that he might still be able to work the style and like be Ricochet, you know, depending on the length of the contract, like even if he's like 38 or like even if you're 40, like trust me, your body will slow down whether or not you're as athletically gifted as a Trevor man. So I'm very excited, you know, because a move like this suggests to me that he is very motivated to show off what he could still do.
Oh, we had a brief freeze there, but I think I got all of your points. That yeah, this is, you know, he greatly benefits from having a strong alternative and one that, you know, the timing is great for a talent that you can bring in and can be an immediate player in AEW. They have a ton of depth. There is going to be, of course, that risk of anyone coming in if it's, but he's going to be coming in at such a value, and I think there's going to be such a demand to see Ricochet outside of WWE that I think he's going to have a really great chance to shine, and he's so attached to the hottest guy in the company in Will Ospreay that is certainly a match you could do on any stage.
But it's far from a sure thing. Whenever we talk about a new talent entering AEW, we have to bring up the topic of how much space does AEW have, not just to, you know, spend money on a guy like a Ricochet, but the airtime and the creative storytelling time, you know, energy to devote to making a Ricochet. Now the path to him is relatively like more straightforward. You just promote this guy as like an incredible in-ring performer. And I think in AEW, that's worth a whole lot more than really any other promotion. But still, you know, you kind of need that extra level to get to a really high status. And what's his promo like these days? I think I've seen a lot of improvement, especially
he's
like
improved.
In his current
he's improved
form.
A lot.
Yeah, but AEW is where I think he's going to have to show, like a Will Ospreay, that maybe he has a different level within him that we haven't seen yet.
Another talent, this the opposite, looks to be WWE bound, is Hikuleo. This was reported by Cassidy Haynes at bodyslam.net that it appeared that Hikuleo and El Fantasmo, who dropped the strong openweight tag titles at Dominion on Sunday, Hikuleo looks to be leaving and looks to be WWE bound. Dave Meltzer confirmed that Hikuleo looks to be heading towards WWE. I am not surprised. I think that this guy in either regime would have been on WWE's radar. I was glad, like in the past, when you had heard his name bounced around, that he opted to stay as long as he did in New Japan. He has gotten a lot better in the past year, and I think he's going to WWE now more seasoned than he would have been even a year ago. But he's still going to be a question mark. He is not someone that I'd place in the, you know, top half of, you know, New Japan talent, but he certainly has now several years of working with all this array of talent and learning as a big man as well. I think that has been a great improvement for him, and teaming with El Fantasmo. And you would probably make the assumption that he's coming in for this Bloodline story in some form or fashion.
Yeah, that would be assumption. And just maybe before I even speak, apologies if like we're experiencing any sort of delays. I'm sure it's, you know, I hope it's not just, well, I'm assuming it's just not me, but apologies, everybody, if you're experiencing it. It's not so bad to the point that I feel like we need to stop the stream. I think people are like understanding our conversation. I am. So just wanted to mention it. I of course you would assume that he would be somewhat attached to everything going on with the Bloodline, but I don't know if that would be the move I would make, John. Like, I think Hik Leo is somebody who could really benefit from spending some time in NXT, where he would be even treated as that much of a bigger deal. You know, like this is a case where I almost feel like there are too many new faces too soon, you know, being introduced right now in within this Bloodline storyline. And I obviously he's tall enough that he wouldn't get lost, but I also wouldn't want to make him just feel like another Tongan in there. When I think you could like give him a real NXT run, maybe even make him a champion, and then bring him a part of whatever might be going on with the Bloodline, or just whatever might be going on with anything in general, where he would feel like that much of a bigger star.
Dax Harwood has posted a video that he's been taken off the road, and he cited a lower back injury that he sustained back at Dynasty. So he's been working on this for about 2 months, where he delivered a pile driver, injuring his lower back. And he said the pain since then has been excruciating, but he tried to tough it out and continued working. But after they did the 20-minute time limit draw with Claudio and Yuta this past Saturday at Collision, he was icing the hematoma, which blew up to what he described as at least the size of a football on his lower back. And he informed Doc Sampson of this, and Sampson immediately has taken him off the road. And Dax was very apologetic for hiding this injury from Tony Khan and from the medical team. And he had an x-ray done on this on Monday. There's no timetable. Does not sound like he needs surgery or anything. He just needs time off to heal this, but it could be a while that he's off the shelf. But this is, you know, the back is, yeah, like that's the kind of injury that if it goes untreated, you're going to have chronic problems throughout your life with. And, you know, and I think he has what a lot of wrestlers have, the same mentality of you push through. And I do think it's worth noting that when you see a guy that's just forcing himself to work through this, it is a bit of a different dynamic when you're in a tag team and there is a partner that is relying on you, because in theory, Cash Wheeler is probably now going to be on the sidelines.
Yeah, you would think so, but wasn't Cash out for a bit, and we ended up getting that like Dax singles run, kind of, right? So, what's stopping Cash from doing the same?
There's nothing. There's nothing stopping them from doing something with Cash in the meantime, and they certainly could. Like they could, but if you're a Dax Harwood, that is always going to be the concern. Is this going to affect my partner as well? But yeah, hopefully this injury is taken care of. Like you watch this guy, and just the way he works and gets around, like he looks like his body is being kept together by like bubble gum. He just looks like every fall you're imagining this guy's going to literally shatter, because he looks like, and part of it is his selling, but the man is just like, he's been wearing that whole, like weight belt of late, where everyone's been comparing him to Tomohiro Ishii with how he looks. So, I mean, I'm certain that he has been trying to compensate for the injury, but yeah. Lower back, not a whole lot of ways to work around that if you're a pro wrestler.
Yeah. Just also like in regards to, you know, tag team wrestling and one guy being out versus another, you also kind of have like the issue of contracts and like, you know, injuries, possibly extending a contract of one guy, how does that affect your tag team partner? And you know, I'm sure they have ways around it, but it just kind of complicates things. This is an interesting thing that he did, like putting out an online video basically admitting to lying about the injury and specifically using it to apologize to the medical staff and his fellow employees. I don't know if we've had too many instances of like this level of what feels like transparency.
Daniel Bryan never put one of these out in 2009 after he passed the medicals by lying.
He did not, no. But
maybe
I mean,
that's going to be the basis of his program with Nigel.
Oh, that would be like perfect sort of motivation. Like all he has to do is just tell people to watch The Last of McGuinness. That's a perfect program already.
You fucking lied, and I told the fucking truth.
I ended up bagging groceries while you were in the WWE. That's a perfect story. Anyway, yeah, sucks about FTR. You have to imagine maybe they were a part of this team AEW storyline leading towards Blood and Guts. If FTR is not a part of it, then that opens up a spot for another team.
Dominion went down on Sunday. Again, if you want a review of that, Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have a show up on the cafe. But they did make some announcements regarding the G1 Climax. So this year, they are scaling things back. Last year, there were 32 people in the G1. This year, it will be 20. And we are going to have 10 people per block. And they're going to announce 18 out of the 20 participants this Sunday during the New Japan Seoul event that is taking place. So what they are going to do is they will announce 9 people in each block, and then they are going to have a qualifying tournament across 4 shows between June 22nd and July 5th to determine the last of the A block and B block. Then, once we get to the tournament itself, the top 3 in each block will advance to the playoff round. The top point getters get byes to the semifinals, so it will be 2nd and 3rd place facing off in the quarterfinals, and then we'll get to a Final Four and the finals on August 18th. Also, they are moving the time limit. Last year, it was moved down to 20 minutes. They are returning to 30-minute time limits this year. So those are the details thus far for the
G. Can you repeat the qualifying round portion again?
So the top 3 will make it in each block. So you'll have 6 people that clinch.
I meant the qualifying rounds, the opening one.
Oh, for that. I don't even know. They didn't even announce like how many people are going to be part of this, or at least I don't know what those details are. I think we're going to get that announced this weekend of how that'll work. But essentially, it's like 2 mini tournaments for 1 spot in each block.
Okay.
Do you like the changes, the reduced number?
Yes, or, I do. Like,
you don't miss 32 people in the G1?
No. The part of the appeal of the G1, like of any sort of like tournament, is that you have like a set cast of characters. Part of the reason why I love F1 is because there are only 20 people to focus on. I only need to know the backstories, and I only need to know the names of 20 people. If they expanded it to 30-something people, it's just like it's just that much more like difficult for anybody to gain any sort of attention and traction. So I much prefer this. It doesn't feel as daunting, and you're talking about wrestling fans, especially on this side of the world, that already have enough on their plate to try to squeeze a G1 into their schedule. Have they talked about how many matches per night? How many block matches per night?
I think it'll just work out to be like 5 each.
Like the usual.
They'll just revert from A block to B block matches.
Okay, cool.
And I'm sure there might be some where you get the loaded A and B block shows as well. But between these changes, going to 20 participants, and the number of times during Dominion, which was in Osaka, that they brought up Tomohiro Ishii facing Katsuyori Shibata in this building in 2013, I think our Rewind Away had some impact.
Always, yes, I'm sure.
So also coming out of Dominion, this is now the updated lineup for Forbidden Door. Jon Moxley retained the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against Evil, and then it was Tetsuya Naito who is coming to rescue the IWGP title from the New Japan part-timer, Jon Moxley. They've got to rescue the belt from this man who is traveling back to Japan in 2 weeks' time for Bloodsport. I mean, and he's being told you just don't travel enough.
A lot of miles, yeah. And I wonder if Moxley would be too disappointed to drop the title.
Got to bring that belt to Numazu for a 6-man tag, okay, John? Yeah. Also confirmed over the weekend, Zack Sabre Jr. will take on Rob is going to hold an open challenge for the television championship, and that joins the previous announced matches with Swerve and Ospreay, the ladder match for the TNT title, Stephanie Vaquer against Mercedes Moné, and Timeless Toni Storm against Mina Shirakawa. So we are up to 7 matches so far.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I think Naito versus Mox is a very good main event. I wonder what do you think main events for Forbidden Door, actually?
Oh, I think it has to be Swerve and Ospreay, even though it is the Forbidden Door show. And from a, like, aesthetically, you would think the IWGP title does headline. And I think there's a possibility of a title change in that one, too.
Mm-hmm. I would more bet on a title change actually happening. Yeah.
I still think Swerve and Ospreay headlines the show.
Interesting. I wonder if politically, like, there's any sort of consideration for them to do that, like headlining an AEW New Japan co-promoted show with two AEW guys versus the one with both guys. I don't know, but I agree, like, I think Swerve and Ospreay feels like the bigger match, and I think it probably will be the better match. But I think Moxley and Naito will do a great job. I was really surprised at how much I enjoyed Moxley versus Evil.
It was very good. It was well above my expectations going in. And I thought the incorporation of, like, Tenzon's Anaconda Vice and the Nagata Lock being used by Evil, like, I thought they really wove the Lumberjacks into it well. And you had the requisite Lumberjack spots, but it never got to be groan-inducing. And again, the House of Torture formula, it does work well every couple of months when you do this, where all of their stuff gets thwarted and it's the babyface that overcomes it all that you got here. And for a 25-minute Evil match on a big show, I thought this one definitely overachieved.
I think Moxley's just, like, his style, his intensity kind of, like, made the match feel a bit more serious, even though you knew you were going to get shenanigans involved. And I just think he's such a great, like, live performer, especially in that sort of, like, brawling, chaotic, like, a bunch of people around the ring type of scenario, that I enjoyed this Evil match a lot more than usual.
Yeah. The Takagi Hanare match was excellent. Jeff Cobb and Tomohiro Ishii was really solid. And the main event with Desperado and Taiji Ishimori, it was a very good card from New Japan on Sunday.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more, going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People versus GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
NXT Battleground went down on Sunday from the Apex. What did you think, first of all, just of the atmosphere and setup of the Apex?
The atmosphere I didn't think was that great. It was fine, especially by the main event. I think I'd got used to it, but, like, if we're comparing it to even the Performance Center, I thought it was a downgrade. If we're comparing it, obviously, to, like, a main roster show, then yes, like, maybe significant downgrade. I was kind of taken aback by how sparse maybe some of those wide shots looked in the UFC Apex. A lot of, like, empty chairs, which you just would never see in the Performance Center, for instance, really on any sort of, like, major television show. Like, there are seat fillers that they hire to make sure, like, the hard cam, like, the seats right behind the announcers during their first on cam are not empty. Those are things that kind of, like, perplex me. I know that there might have been, were there different production crews for this one, John?
I don't know. I'm not sure of that.
Okay, but
I noticed the same things you did that are, like, to the WWE train production eye, that certainly were glaring. Like, there was, did you catch the guy that was seated next to Vic and Booker? And there's certain times when you see him, like, up there, and he's, like, leading, like, the crowd responses and stuff like that. Yeah. It was funny because a lot of people that their only exposure to this is through the UFC cards, and they're primarily MMA fans, thought, wow, they did a great job with the Apex, because the Apex is usually, it's way more dead than this. But I'm watching it from just, yeah, the comparison to the Performance Center. And even though it is technically a bigger, like you could fit more people in this, it felt like less. Mm-hmm. Even the room on the floor for the camera operators to get, like, they felt like they were squeezed in here. Mm-hmm. And I'm just watching this, and I was like, the Performance Center feels better than this. And just the difference between this and just an arena setting with a couple thousand people, I think makes a giant difference. So I was more on your side of things. I understand, like, the synergies here, and it's not like these were cheap tickets either, but you are sacrificing atmosphere and just the excitement of a show for this crossover promotion that they were trying.
A lot of these things, I assume, if they're going to try this experiment again, will probably be hashed out. You know, I'm sure their post-production meeting might be occurring will identify and probably fix a lot of these issues. But like, the success of this show isn't necessarily going to be determined by whether or not the atmosphere felt good. It would, I'm assuming, more rely on whether or not it was a financial success. And the metric of what determines this particular show to be a financial success is at least an interesting, maybe mysterious one. You know, like, what exactly was the reason for this, other than, yes, the cost synergies? But do they have any bigger plans for Vegas as a destination for WWE, as a consistent, you know, location?
Did you know that there was a medical professional live in attendance?
I saw a photo. Yes. Dr. Schneer.
Dr. Schneer took in the night's action. What match stood out to you the most?
So honestly, like, let's just say, like, NXT has done a great job with this particular card of making it look interesting on paper. I probably was a lot more interested in this, like, takeover level show than a lot of other ones. And that's because, like, there are a lot of unknowns. First of all, you have, like, a TNA NXT crossover match that I thought had a lot, like, was really good. I thought Roxanne and Jordan Grace had a great match. But even like the variable of like having that North American women's ladder match with the relative unknowns that you had in there, I was really curious by. And that match turned out, I think, fine, like, good, you know, like, especially considering the level of like experience there. I thought everybody came together to create a pretty good match, and there weren't any blemishes that were like that, I don't know, derailing of anything. Maybe a bit like hectic and not everything was perfect, but like, I also like, I kind of have I set a bit of a curve for that one, and I thought it was entertaining. Trying to think, what did you think of NXT Underground?
I thought that the two, like, it was a very like intense pace that they had for this, but for me it was the most pro wrestling version of one of these underground matches that they have done. It was just kind of too much for me, of just all the brawling on the floor and doing, like, they wanted to work as many like pro wrestling spots into it. I wouldn't say it would like left any like strong impression on me. I just thought it got, to me, too goofy for like what I'm watching for those NXT Underground matches, that they kind of have tried to have this more kind of serious like Fight Club tone to them. But it was, you know, by design, they wanted to try this, and to what is largely a pro wrestling audience, like, maybe that stuff works a lot better when you're incorporating more of these pro wrestling spots and doing less of like the blood sport presentation, for instance.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I guess if your comparison point is like Shayna versus Ronda, this was way, way better than that, probably with a crowd and a building that I think is a lot more conducive to having that sort of style. I don't disagree that it's like, it's hard to buy that style seriously. Like, when you're trying to sell this as a shoot, but like, you're seeing somebody clearly pull their punches, it's It's a bit of a harder sell, but I
would have just done the straight up match at this point between them. Like, I think, like, I think the lights out, I don't think that helped either.
I don't think
like,
so either.
It really looked like it was just, it's a small, empty building, mm-hmm. and you're turning the lights off. Like, I almost wish they had just done the straight up match, and you could have done all of this, and I don't think you would have run into issues that I think only hampered the presentation rather than enhanced it.
Yeah, but I appreciate, like, the experiment. I appreciate, like, just a difference in style. I was a lot more intrigued probably by like a unique match type like this than another. And you got a bit of a surprise to me, you know, having Lola Vice win.
All right. Last thing here is just the ratings notes from Friday. SmackDown was down 4% in viewership with 2,207,000 viewers and a 0.61 in the demo. So they were down from last week. This was their second highest overall audience since April 19th, but they were not going against anything significant on Friday night. There was no big NBA or NHL to deal with. Rampage, for the first time in 7 weeks, was back to its normal time slot at 10 p.m. Eastern time, and they only drew 256,000 viewers and a 0.09. So you might want to see, first of all, it's not like they advertised a ton for the show. It was Mina Shirakawa and Serena Deeb. That was the only thing they pushed on Wednesday. It's also been 7 weeks since they were in this time slot, but still, that viewership, that's one of their lowest ever in that in their normal time slot. I believe that's their lowest number ever in the regular 10 p.m. Friday time slot. So you are going to have these problems when you bounce a show around so much. But I think just the bounce around is not telling the full picture, that this also is just Rampage's urgency just continues to diminish for many people. And if you looked at the lineup, like that's what it was. Even though the Mina Shirakawa Serena Deeb match, I quite enjoyed. I thought they had a really strong match. But man, you're getting excellent wrestling across all AEW properties. That do you need an extra hour of it? But we don't have to have a whole discussion on Rampage. But it was a bad viewership figure. To Raw, we now move. From Toledo, Ohio, the Huntington Center, which they did have a sellout of WrestleTix reporting over 6,800 people. And we got the return of a graphic way. This was the 28th TV sellout and 42nd event sellout of 2024. So we're not doing consecutive anymore. Now we're just racking up numbers.
Right. Yeah. I guess just an excuse to promote the fact that they've sold out. Although, like, what does a sellout mean? Like, what does this building hold? Did they limit?
This is a smaller building. I don't think this was where, like, they cut off, like, half the arena. It's a small building. So, it's about a 7,000. Yeah. This is a sellout for them.
I mean, the job of a promotion is to kind of promote its successes and maybe diminish its losses, right? And they're just doing that.
Drew McIntyre starts the show. There were CM Punk chants, but he had no line for CM Punk and nothing with Punk. So my idea of having Punk on commentary this weekend, maybe they will do some last minute thing. But I figure they're keeping CM Punk in the back of people's mind if he shows up unexpectedly on Saturday.
I don't think he's announced for the panel.
I don't think they announced anyone for the panel. I think they just said they're doing a 2-hour pre-show on Saturday, but I don't think they put the graphic up like they usually do of who's going to be.
They've announced so many things. Like, they got this Fanatics thing, and I in my head, I'm just kind of mixed up, but okay. Yeah.
So Drew just states that he's going to be the new world champion, and wherever Damian Priest goes, so do the Judgment Day. So that prompts the Judgment Day to come out. And Priest says, I don't need the Judgment Day to be champion. I'm champion because I'm Damian Priest. And Priest then suggests that tonight Drew take on Finn Balor. And he tells Drew, if you win, Judgment Day is banned from ringside. But if Balor wins, not because I need them, but just so they can be there to watch, then they get to be ringside. So they're not going to run in. I'm just going to fly these guys over there to stand at ringside, and you have my word, they won't get involved. And if I was Finn Balor, I'd be like, dude, I'm taking this match off. I'm staying home this weekend. I'm not booked.
Yeah.
So yeah. That was our setup for the main event.
A pretty tame go-home segment, I would say, you know, for a title match on the show. Nothing personal was really said between these two. No clever insults that we've come to expect from Drew. It was a pretty standard match to set up tonight's main event. But I found very interestingly for Damian Priest on this show, they were pushing him as a straight up babyface this week.
Drew, you know, or Damian?
Drew.
Drew. Yeah, Drew was the total babyface on this show, complete with like reconciliation with Sheamus and like winning clean, overcoming the numbers in the main event. And perhaps that's just, you know, leading people for Saturday because he's going to be the babyface on that show. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought the same thing on this show. Like they positioned Drew McIntyre as total babyface characteristics up and down this show.
And even if, yes, we all know he's going to get cheered on Saturday, like, do they usually jump ahead of that and on the Monday promote in America to an Ohio crowd that Drew is a babyface as well? I don't know. It felt like a bit of a hard pivot to me. But obviously they're trying to tell some sort of cohesive story between what you see on Monday to what you see on Saturday. It just felt kind of unusual. And that probably also explains why Drew didn't go after CM Punk. They probably just wanted a straight up babyface reaction for him. Whether or not they got that in the main event, did it work? We shall discuss.
Liv Morgan is in the Judgment Day's clubhouse and Dominic walks in and tries to get her to leave. And Liv Morgan offers Dom her hotel room key and says, "You shouldn't be with a woman that makes you call her mommy. You should be with a woman that calls you daddy." And Dominic, dude, both these two, I think, are tremendous in these roles. Mm-hmm. And she leaves the hotel card with Dominic. And I thought this was going to have a much bigger payoff later in the show. This mystery of who ends up.
There
was.
The mystery continues, I guess, whether or not we see the aftermath of what's happening at Raw. We shall see.
Well, then we had a shot of a National Puerto Rican Day with Damian Priest and Zelina Vega at the parade over the weekend. And we go to our first match of the show, Io Sky against Lyra Valkyria. This is a rematch from the Queen of the Ring. And Lyra tries to go for the cover the same way that she beat Io. This time she kicks out and then Sky comes back. The Nightwing is hit when Dakota Kai rakes the eyes of Lyra. So Lyra attacks both Dakota Kai and Kairi Sane on the floor. Lyra is then knocked off the turnbuckle, hit with the double knees, but gets her knees up for the over the moonsault. And Sky counters another Nightwing by grabbing her hair and using a crucifix to pin Lyra in 10 minutes and 27 seconds. And then Damage Control attack Lyra, and Io Sky will not stop the attack until Caden Carter and Katana Chance run out. So we will probably get a six woman tag on TV soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought this match was excellent, just like I thought their last one was excellent. You know, I'm loving Io's new, more erratic style. There's like a new, like there's just a uniqueness and a new energy to her in ring ever since she had that Mania match. She just seems so motivated and just so on now, and she's just so much fun to watch. And Lyra Valkyria is so incredibly technically proficient. She continues to look really good in ring in every single match. Great chemistry as displayed prior by these two. They're one apiece now, so I'm looking forward to the rubber match between the two of them. The in ring they definitely have down, but this crowd was not that reactive for this.
Dude, this crowd
match.
for a sold out crowd, like they were pretty ho hum for a lot on this show.
Yeah, yeah. Now, like the main event, we will discuss because like those are two established stars. This them not being reactive to this, I can kind of understand because like as good as I think Lyra Valkyria has been, they've yet to really establish that interesting of a character for her still at this point. She's still brand new, so they've got time. But I can at least suppose that might be part of the reason why.
Well, and let's like look at things here. Like you have some really. You know, you have characters that they are definitely getting behind, and you have some stars on this show. But if you were someone that bought a ticket for this show, say 2 months ago, and you're looking at that Raw lineup, and that's now, you know, Punk and Seth, they've been hurt for a while. But as we mentioned, you add Becky to the mix. This was another week without Gunther. You didn't even have Jey Uso on this show. So, like, that's a lot of your star power and ones that are going to get the most crowd engagement. So, to many people, like, this is a very scaled down Raw roster that we are seeing week to week.
Very true. Yeah. And to that list, Becky, Rhea Ripley.
Ripley's off.
Maybe Cody Rhodes to some people, you know, whenever they bought this ticket months ago. So, yeah, I can understand that.
We go to the clubhouse and Dominic reveals the hotel room key, which Carlito thinks is cool. The Miz is searching for R-Truth and by Sami Zayn. Zayn then runs into Maxine and Tozawa and checks in on Maxine, how her ankle is. She says that she's been better. And then Sami Zayn, this might have been a first in the history of pro wrestling, asked, did you go back and watch the footage from last week? And Maxine did go back and watch Raw last week and says, and Sami says, you don't have to take this. And Otis appears and he tries to explain what he did last week to Sami Zayn. Zayn says, I don't understand your reasoning for staying with Gable. He says, it's one thing for me to have stayed with the Bloodline, but I don't understand your reasoning. I was like, you were pretty, you were in this identical spot and did not leave. So, I mean, he's trying to understand here. And then Otis says,
well, Zayn was at least getting some pretty great merchandising checks, I bet.
Yeah, I don't know how well these Alpha Academy shirts are selling. Mm. But Otis explains that he has lost everything. He lost Tucky. He lost his peach. And he lost his money in the bank briefcase. And throughout all of that, Chad Gable stood by me. And he says that...
Shout out Tucky.
Tucky. Shout out Mandy Rose.
Pete, my peach, yes. I think she's doing fine.
She's doing okay. Otis says, I'd be nothing without him. And Zayn says, you are special. And one day, I hope you can find that out for yourself. Sami Zayn is the only babyface in the world who could pull off this dialogue, telling another, you know, another man that you are special. But they did here, and they're continuing this slow, slow burn.
I would totally watch a Sami Zayn kids TV show, you know? Like him as like a Mr. Rogers type, just giving me like positive affirmations. He's a great motivational speaker.
You know who's great is George St. Pierre on his Instagram now, where he does these like really like just nice talks. I listened to one the other day where he just said he's talking about if someone cuts you off in traffic.
You sent me that.
Oh, did I send you this one?
Yeah, you did.
He just explains. You probably didn't watch it, did you?
I did watch it.
Oh, yes. You did. Okay. I thought you just probably swipe and don't just delete. But he explains they might be having a bad day. They might be having a really bad moment. What does it matter to you? Are you just going to save 30 seconds by getting faster to your destination? Just think about the other guy. It's like, I'm going to do that, George. Thank you.
I actually did respond to you. I said, what's the rush?
Oh, you did. I thought that was funny. That was good. You always have good responses. We go back to the clubhouse. There were about 18 clubhouse segments on the show. Priest walks in and asks, what's this hotel card all about? And they look down. The card has disappeared. Where's the card?
Where's the card? Yeah.
And then we cut back to the arena and the screen short circuits, kind of like our feed here. And we get Michael Cole. Oh, that just QR like that. Code stuff.
Just like
all that QR code stuff again. I am so ready for this to finally reach its conclusion.
The problem is like we don't even have an idea of when this thing will climax. Like they've gotten to the point now where I think they built up like a good amount of interest. They started acknowledging them on TV, which leads you to assume that they're probably going to pay it off soon. But there's no indication beyond that now. Like, there's no indication that this is like, you know, coming to a head at any point. They haven't even like dropped enough like Easter eggs to get you a bit more interested. No more.
They're not even dropping like details and hints. It's just it's all your coded messages. And I don't know. I'm not even looking at them anymore. So I could be mistaken on some of those. Then we had this incredible Ludwig Kaiser promo. He didn't just beat Sheamus. He eliminated Sheamus. The rise of Kaiser has begun, and soon he will be Mr. Money in the Bank. And he has also taken the Christian Cage turtleneck approach.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a turtleneck is definitely a heel form of fashion. So interestingly, no Gunther for these several weeks, and I think that's been great for Kaiser. They're giving Kaiser the spotlight, making him step up to feel like he's not just a sidekick, as he said in this promo right here. So I think it's working. He's very talented, this guy. You know, not just in ring, but as a promo, and now he's got his own like Randy Orton punt spot with this steps that he's injured several people in, and. Is he a Randy Orton level type of performer? I guess we shall see, but it's very promising so far.
And the qualifying matches start next Monday for Money in the Bank. Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee, and Braun Strowman against Dominic, JD, and Carlito. So we're getting Rey and Dominic back in the ring together. And Michael Cole, for this was like the best 10 seconds of Michael Cole on the whole show. Oh, here comes Dragon Lee in here with Dominic. Look at Dragon Lee. Oh, wait a minute. That's Rey. And Michael Cole, like, he's fully calling Rey Mysterio as Dragon Lee, which Rey should be just thanking his stem cell hookups that he's confused with the man half his age and looking just as built as that man as well. So
it really is amazing. Like, these stem cells, well, however you feel about them, I mean, they clearly do work. I mean, this
he had like the old, like, not like old tights, but like the look, like this was like full out like 96 look for him.
He used to just have those big knee braces underneath those pants. He doesn't even have that anymore. He's moving pants fast. Anymore. Like, it's really incredible how
this,
how good
this guy
doing.
Was told in like 99 to stop putting any impact on his knees.
Okay, well,
like 99, and he
who needs
through,
to
like,
listen
all those
who needs to listen to doctors.
Are you aware of science and where it's heading? So
that's right. Hey, a bunch of people in the chat room are saying the QR code led to a countdown, and Matt Hahn says there's debuting next week supposedly. All right, well,
all right,
we'll see.
That's great. There's a spinning DDT on JD. Dragon Lee gets the tag and hits a double stomp when JD makes the save, and then Liv appears and Dom is telling her to leave, and he's down on the apron, and Liv is on the apron. So Vega hits Liv from behind, and Liv lands right on top of Dominic. And there is Liv in her glory here. And then Vega attacks Liv and takes her away. Braun gets the big tag. He runs around the ring, killing everyone. That spot got over well, and then hits the power slam to Carlito and Lee with the splash off the shoulders of Braun as a Dragon Lee, some call him Rey Mysterio, got the pin at 13 minutes and 57 seconds.
But the match was a lot of fun. Crowd seemed to react really well. And especially the final spot with a Dragon Lee jumping off of Strowman's shoulders. Dom is just like, he and Rey have been kept separate long enough now that a tease of their pairing inside the ring still feels really special and anticipated. And they didn't even use it that much here because, like, Dom is sort of interesting enough on his own that he doesn't even need that. This Liv story feels like it's the biggest thing on Raw right now. These two certainly provided some of the most attention and star power within the match itself. And it allows Zelina Vega to actually have a role, too. So she might get a title shot out of all this.
Because she attacked her from beyond. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's
she
enough.
She didn't even want it, yeah.
There was an Ilya Dragunov video where he says, intensity means suffering. Okay. Then he's in the locker room. Ricochet comes in and knows what Ilya is capable of. You're going to get to show it tonight. And Ilya says that he's going to slay that monster, Braun. And then I want another round with you, Ricochet. And Ricochet says, to be determined, Ilya. We will see about that one. Damage Control are backstage, and Dakota asks Io, what was that out there? Sky says she took care of it, and then she starts rubbing her head, and she screams uncontrollably and says Damage Control has to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Finally, some evolution being promised in this group, you know? Hopefully a bit more of a serious turn for them, because I think, like, in their existence, they've just... don't exactly know, like, what the motivations are. They're just like a, you know, like a group of Bailey's friends. And I think they've kind of lost a serious edge to them that I wonder if they ever really had. So hopefully this takes them to a different level.
They all scream. That's going to be the edge on their character.
Interesting. Okay. We'll see.
Just screaming uncontrollably. Sami Zayn comes out. It's been a tough go for him, but he's going to end it all Saturday with Chad Gable, calls him a manipulative psychopath, and Alpha Academy come out, and Gable tells him not to worry. All of these members are happy with me, and Zayn laughs at this idea and says they won't be happy until they leave you, and Gable explains how families stick together, and Otis is going to be with him on Saturday, and he's going to unleash the version of Otis that doesn't feel bad about inflicting pain. So he sends Otis into the ring for the non-title match with Sami Zayn, and Gable gets onto the apron with instructions and telling Otis, stick with the plan, you idiot. And the distraction leads to Otis turning around and eating the Huluva kick, and Sami Zayn pins poor Otis in a minute 32. This was our Daniel Bryan Sheamus moment. Minus the kiss.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not much to say about him in a half match.
Gable attacked Sammy and tries to get Otis to strike, and he's slapping Otis. The fans want him to attack Gable, and then Otis is in the corner. He starts to shake, and he turns around, and he runs toward Gable for the clothesline, and Gable sidesteps, but Otis continues and clotheslines Zayn and hits him with a World's Strongest Slam. But then Otis turns his attention towards Gable, and Gable's begging off in the corner. He lifts up his fist, but then he leaves as Gable smiles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder, you know, so they continue dangling the Otis turn, and it's working incredibly well. Like, Otis just, he's doing a bit more talking this week. He just feels like he's that much more of a presence. You know, I had said weeks ago that I don't know what the ceiling is for somebody like Otis. Is he damaged goods? Is he too much of a comedic character at this point for me to ever be able to take him seriously as any sort of singles competitor? They're starting to change my mind. You know, they're starting to make me feel like certainly this crowd is responding to him like he's a big star. And I think in ring, they're trying to make him a little bit more serious, even though he did lose in a minute and a half here. But that's because of Chad Gable. So they're making a real go of turning Otis into a serious threat. And I think they're doing a pretty good job.
And Gable's another one with a contract coming up as well, as he's in the midst of all of this. So that's something to watch on, too.
But you have no indication that they're going to write him off at all.
No, I mean, to me, if you have that solidified, I think you could put the title on him this Saturday, but you would want to have, and I would say if they did that, that would be a pretty strong indicator.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People versus GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Miz is continuing to search for R-Truth. We get Sonya Deville chatting up with Natalia, and Truth exits a room, states they have a tag title match tonight against the APA, and he just saw a fortune teller. Well, Scarlett leaves the room. She was the fortune teller, and the tag title match is with AOP.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really do think that the Miz and Truth run is really wearing out its welcome with me. I like Truth as a comedy act. I like the Miz with Truth as a comedy act. But man, as a championship team, like, the wrestling is fine in spurts, but man, they can't carry a division. And I've kind of had enough.
In fairness, there is no division on Raw.
That is true, yeah. Well, I mean, you have the New Day that are currently involved with AOP. It's the New Day, it's AOP. The Creed Brothers are just kind of waiting for Gable to turn, so that can happen soon enough. Am I missing anybody?
You mentioned AOP.
Yeah.
That's your division.
That's it, yeah.
Then they confirmed what was teased on Sunday. Cody Rhodes will be on NXT on Tuesday night. So this is very interesting because NXT the last 2 weeks, they've done really strong numbers. They were first on cable last week, which a 0.22 won them the night on cable. So that tells you something right there. But this week, you have the advantage of you're coming off this Battleground show. You're riding a bit of a hot streak on TV. And Wednesday, Dynamite's going up against Game 3 of the NBA Finals. So last week, Dynamite did a 0.28. NXT did a 0.22. And Dynamite has not fallen below a 0.23 during this whole playoff season. But they're going to be hurt this Wednesday. And it would seem like NXT is just loading things up for Tuesday, that this could be a week where NXT beats AEW in the demo. And we all react on Thursday to what this means.
Has that happened yet or no?
On a Tuesday? I don't know. I don't know if it's happened.
And is it that big of a deal if it happens anymore? Like it's,
almost no reason for Cody to be on this show. So believe me, it's a deal to
well, like you could just suggest that they just simply want to carry on the momentum that they built, you know, really well. But like, we know that NXT is getting hot. We know AEW is kind of cooling off. Are we at the point now where like we can see these as very equal brands again?
I think they're very different because NXT is not it's not a touring brand that we're looking at in terms of like selling tickets. Nor do we have like pay-per-view to compare to, but like there's no doubt though that NXT has greatly resurrected itself over this past year from kind of the doldrums of their 2.0 phase into what it is now. Like the show has gotten younger, and you know, this is 2 weeks, but it's very encouraging, especially last week where it wasn't like you had an outside celebrity for last week. It was just talent on the show that seemed to be what's sparking this. And, you know, they're going to try for a big number and advance their stories as well. Kathy Kelly interviews Isla Dawn and Elba Fire. Essentially, their message was they are wrestling in their home country and they're going to win the tag titles on Saturday. But not before taking on Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler. And this was crazy. Baszler was knocked out cold on Sunday, and I guess no medical suspension from the Nevada State Athletic Commission. She was able to compete 24 hours later.
It's a different universe.
She was unconscious. She was going. She was shooting for the referee's legs after they did the full like. MMA style finish there, so that would indicate a concussion, right? Storyline,
I mean, in wrestling, I guess you know the recovery time is a lot less.
Well, she was much better here. She got the tag, and they were working on her knee early on, and then she just gets kicked in the bad knee and just fires up on Elba Fire and applies the Kirifuda clutch, and Fire goes out in 2 minutes and 38 seconds. When I say there was no reaction to this finish, I mean, I don't think there was one person in the building that made a sound when this match ended. I couldn't believe it. Like, usually just, you might have a crowd that's dead during a match, but the finish occurs and it's just the natural pop moment, but nothing. There was just a flat line when this ended. And that was that.
You probably assume that they were really hoping for the NXT Underground at this point with all the people ringside, you know. Pounding on the mat and everything. Crowd just, this is unfortunately part of the issue with this tag team division, especially the women's tag team division, where they just don't feel like they have that much storyline development. And you're talking about Dawn and Fire that have not been on TV until like a couple weeks before this. And as much as maybe we've known Shayna and Zoe to be a team, they've hardly created any sort of interest in them as characters either. So this felt like it was a bit of a rehab win for Shayna after losing to Lola Beist on at Battleground. Beyond that, it kind of sucks for Alba Fire to lose to a one-legged person, but maybe they'll win the titles. We don't know.
This would have been the week. You want to get this quick rehab win, put just two enhancement talents in there for this role. And with Isla Dawn and Elba Fire, let's have 3 minutes of Jackie Redmond doing a sit down of what this means for you to going home to Scotland. And let's give them something to go into Saturday with. I just thought this was nothing. And the crowd saw it the exact same way. But following that was the big match between Bron Breakker and Ilya Dragunov. And we got more text on Braun's singlet this week. This is becoming my new favorite ongoing story. So this week it read, meaner than evil, badass dog.
Are we trying to build up to like a poem, you think?
I mean, he added more this week. Last week it was just badass dog, and now we got meaner than evil here.
Interesting. Maybe you'll get a whole song at the end of it.
It's coming. Well, Braun sends him throat first into the middle rope, the Enzo injury spot, and they go to the break. Braun is mauling him with ground and pound and attacking his neck, which Ilya would sell for the rest of this match. He finally hits Braun with a series of lariats, but can't get him off his feet until the Constantine special. Then goes to the rolling Germans, but of course he's injuring his neck in the process here. Does the Hiromu Takahashi DVD into the corner, and then a coast-to-coast dropkick and huge senton for a two count. Ilya then runs the ropes right into a clothesline, and as Braun sets up for the spear, he's met with a flying knee and H-bomb, but again the neck is injured, so he can't capitalize, and Braun rolls to the floor. So Ilya then drills him with a boot and sends this dude flying over the desk. They get on top. Braun lifts up Ilya and drops him like a gourd buster with his ribs onto the side of the desk, and then does it on the barricade. Ilya is coming back with slaps when Braun spears him in the injured ribs, but Ilya rolls to the floor. So Braun goes to the floor, and the speed, I'm going to say this every time because it's always incredible to watch how much speed this guy gets. He just runs around the corner and takes this guy into another planet with this spear on the floor. Ilya manages to get in at the count of nine, and he is staggering into the ring where he is hit with one more spear as Braun Breaker. I'm sorry, Michael Cole is going to correct me. The unpredictable badass wins at 16 minutes and 2 seconds.
Mm.
Awesome match.
Really good match. You know, these two do not suffer from any of the issues of relatively newcomers to the main roster. People that might be kind of stuck in the tag team division without any sort of like momentum or attention. These two have won over the main roster crowd really quickly. Their in-ring has been amazing. Their creative has been really good. And I think both guys have really been showcased to fantastic levels right out of the gate. And I thought this was the right outcome of the match. You know, Breaker is the one that is the unbeatable monster. Dragunov more sort of like your underdog who refuses to give up type, who can't afford a loss like this. But this is a rivalry you could see going far into the future, carrying over from NXT.
I'm hoping that Braun Breaker requests a King of the Ring qualifying match for his next match. He wants to get into next year's tournament ahead of time.
I think they might just give him the crown.
He doesn't want. So then we go to Damian Priest, who tells the Judgment Day that this has to change. Dominic finds the hotel card in his pocket. How did this get here? And JD McDonough, like this is Annabelle, calls the card evil. It's got to go. And Finn Balor says that Liv is trying to drive a wedge between them. Priest tells Dom, you've got to put your foot down with Liv. And they invite Carlito in for the fist bump. And then it's Finn Balor who takes the card and just puts it in his pocket. And that's the last we see of the hotel card.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So as of 12:15 a.m., where's Finn Balor? That's a big question.
I guess maybe that's the look on his face when they realized this was on national television.
It's probably the look on his wife's face when he saw this segment. Yeah. No, it's interesting. It's all really fun. I think they're playing with the whole Liv Morgan dynamic incredibly well. And now we see a lot of the Easter eggs starting to pay off here. We saw Finn Balor in the same car as Liv Morgan in one of the background shots. What exactly is going on with Finn Balor and Liv Morgan?
Drew is in the back, and Sheamus comes in and tells Drew how he's on the cusp of greatness and tells him to take it home this Saturday. And Sheamus announces that he is going for the money in the bank. And they're going to go for some pints like old times on Saturday. And if Drew wins the title and Sheamus has the money in the bank briefcase, it'll be a banger.
Yes.
A banger way.
Yeah, the banger bros reuniting here. Yep.
So I think Drew is killing this guy in the immediate future.
Maybe. We'll see. But, I mean, this week it was Drew McIntyre straight up babyface again, you know, from 2020. Sure. Yeah. It was interesting. You know, these two, I think, always have very good chemistry just as personalities. Sheamus and the Money in the Bank. Yeah, why not? Yeah, sure.
Sheamus wearing his Monday best here.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good look for him, don't you think?
It's his only look. It's just, it's like, you can't convince me this is the only outfit he has in his wardrobe.
No, I'm sure he's got several different ties and several different versions of this hat.
You know that tie is not getting undone at the end of each day. He's just like, it's just one knot that has lasted all these months.
Yeah, yeah. Most likely, yeah.
Kathy Kelly is with the final testament. Kathy's question regarding AOP going for the tag titles. Is this a major step in your ultimate vision? Cross says, yes, it is. This is a major step. This title match that we brokered about an hour ago with tarot cards. And they state that after they win the tag titles, Xavier Woods will realize he should be with them. I was like, I can't fathom any performer watching this scene and stating, man, I wish I could be by these guys' side. I mean, talk about a group that just has no defining features that unite them. Like, I can't imagine these five traveling together and having anything to talk about.
Can you imagine, like, these five, like, sharing, like, an Airbnb, you know?
No. No, like, I can't. I can't imagine Paul Ellering coming down to the bed and breakfast, and there's Scarlett reading the newspaper, and Paul stating, hi.
At this point, I really think they should consider revamping the Final Testament into like a sitcom. And you have, you know, the dad, Karrion Kross, just like, hey, like, always just trying to do my best, but I'm always down on my luck. You know, shit just never really goes my way. You have, like, you know, the wife that, you know, like, everybody seems to like, but never gets to speak. You have the two bratty kids in Akum and Rezar, just like always up to no good. You know, they just don't even like to talk. They just like to destroy things. And then you have Grandpa here, Grandpa Ellering, who just, like, again, doesn't say a whole lot, just kind of snarls and probably doesn't smell too good these days. I'd be way more interested in that.
Who's the Cross?
Excellent.
So R-Truth and Miz took on AOP for the world tag titles. Truth gets in.
By the way, like, it's nice that we're getting Scarlett actually reading some lines here, because I don't know if, like, they realize, but there are two managers in this stable, and neither of them get to speak. It's all Karrion Kross.
It's all Karrion Kross.
Now, Karrion Kross.
Dude, it's like four mutes and Karrion Kross. Like, there's just too much. It's an excessive group.
And at this point, Karrion Kross is really more of a manager than a wrestler. So, like, really, you've got, like, 60% manager in this stable here. Like, it's really AOP and three managers for them. So I don't exactly know how they're divvying up with their prize earnings, but it really can't be much for AOP by the end.
So Truth is doing his Cena spots on Akum when Scarlett distracts the referee on the apron, allowing Kross to trip both Truth and Miz as they were setting up for their five-knuckle shuffles. New Day run down, attacking Karrion Kross, and then Truth hits Akum with a belt shot, which he no-sells, but as he's focused on Truth, Miz rolls him up with a schoolboy in 5 minutes and 36 seconds as R-Truth and The Miz retain their world tag titles, extending their reign to day 66.
Yeah, yeah. I also found it interesting how, like, Karrion Kross said, if we win these tag team titles, it's really going to make Xavier Woods consider joining us. As if, like, that's your end goal, getting Woods to join us instead of actually winning these tag team championships.
Well, did this screw up their negotiations by losing this match?
Clearly it did, yeah. That's a sitcom episode right there. What do you do? Yeah.
Well, Ricochet is helping his pal Ilya to the back when Braun attacks Ilya again. So Ricochet starts attacking Braun and they head out to the parking lot where nothing good ever happens to a babyface. And Ricochet is sent into a production truck. And then in their Who Killed WCW moment, Ricochet takes a lawn dart into the production truck. I'm sure not by mistake. Seemed like his peace out to Rey Mysterio. And then Braun takes him up these steps and power slams him through a windshield. And we come back from commercial and they've got the reaction shot of Samantha Irvin inside the arena watching this happen. As they note, that's Ricochet's fiance. And Samantha Irvin might have been the best performer on this entire show, as mm-hmm. she is then out by the ambulance after the break. She is in tears as Ricochet is taken out in the stretcher, and Samantha's yelling, "I want to go with him." And this emotional farewell, potentially forever, of Ricochet leaving with his fiance to the ambulance, off into the distance, we have Michael Cole in his somber tone, trying to convey the seriousness and finding the words for a grieving audience at home, says, "I know our social media team will be all over this." Thank God.
Is that silly? I mean, how else would you update people, you know, after you're off air?
Well, good to know. Good to know. Social's on top of this. So there you go. That was our angle. Presumably the end of Ricochet.
A very impressive angle. I mean, shit, like this body slam on the hood of a car. Yes, probably not real glass, but still, probably a real hood at least. And that can't feel very good, okay? I don't think...
Real hood. Cry me a river.
That's right. Yeah. He went out with, like, you know, like, I hope he's okay after this, honestly. Like, it didn't look great, but we did get the thumbs up, so I guess... In storyline, Ricochet is alive.
Something tells me he'll just be fine.
Is he brain dead in storyline? Like, how are they going to explain his lack of return?
Imagine they came back the next week and just explained before break, Ricochet didn't make it.
That'd be awful. It'd be really distasteful. But yeah, I'm sure they'll explain somehow. But hey, man,
I want to apologize. I would never want to besmirch WWE. They would never do something that would question good taste. Okay, I don't want people to.
Samantha Irvin, like, listen,
she was amazing. I thought she really made this angle to me.
Totally, they never really kind of like.
And now for the future, like, Ricochet might be gone, but she's always now going to have this thing about, like, she has to announce Braun Breaker, and there will always be like this weird like dynamic that this is the guy that like. Killed off your fiance, and I just thought she was excellent in terms of like just her reaction to this that they had her on camera for, and then the ambulance stuff, and then oh my god, she was so good in this role that I dealt with Pat McAfee having to do commentary. If ever there was confirmation that her job is extremely secure, it was this, which I guess you got your kick out of Pat McAfee trying his hand, and this is not that easy of a gig.
For one match in the main event, I thought McAfee was funny, and he did a fun job here.
He introduced Drew McIntyre as a big, handsome bastard from Scotland and Balor with 0% body fat on a 225-pound frame. So we get down to the match. Drew's arm gets wrapped around the post multiple times, and then Drew sends him over the desk with a belly-to-belly to set up the break. Balor is working on the arm, going for an armbar, but gets slammed out. And when Drew goes for the claymore, it's cut off with a sling blade, and Balor follows with a tope conjuro. Climbs to the top for the coup de grace, but is stopped with a Glasgow kiss and superplex. Hits the future shock, and then as he's setting up the claymore, Damian Priest walks down. Carlito shows up, as does JD. Drew dispatches them, hits the claymore onto JD, and then Balor capitalizes again. Goes for the coup de grace, but misses, and Drew hits the claymore, eyes Damian Priest as he pins Balor in 12 minutes and 57 seconds. This would have been a great spot if he hit the claymore and the hotel card flew out of his pocket. That would be something.
Great.
So no Judgment Day at Clash at the Castle, and Priest and Drew just did the stare down to end the show.
This match, too, was really, really, really dead. With crowd reactions. And this one surprised me because these are two former champions. They're established stars. But this crowd just like didn't really react to much. And I wonder how much of it was because of the sort of sudden Drew McIntyre playing babyface throughout the entire night and in the body of this match. How much of that might have affected the reaction? Or did they just like not care? Or were they simply tired? I don't know. But
I thought it was a bad crowd for most of the night. Like we had it throughout the night. There was a ton of backstage stuff tonight, like more than usual on a WWE show. But to that end, like you got an incredible 16-minute match in the middle here as well. I don't know. I just thought overall it was not a great crowd tonight, but it was pretty noticeable. And yeah, the main event did not turn things around.
Yeah. So Clash of the Castle is coming up. Yeah, I found it interesting that they went so hard with pushing Drew as like a pretty much a babyface on the show. So we'll see what Glasgow, I can assume Glasgow will not react the same way as Toledo. No offense, Toledo, but I'm anticipating quite the reaction for Drew McIntyre on Saturday. Really Friday as well. Oh, well, I guess he won't be on Friday, but the Friday show should be really big as well. So that's coming up.
We'll get an AJ Styles go home promo on Friday, maybe.
Yes. Will they sing a version? Do they have a song over there with the word phenomenal?
They'll have to live up to Leon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was Raw. I do like overall, like the overarching stories involving Liv Morgan and Dominic. That's kind of the thread that's going through this. I can also understand
Otis and Gable, I was going to say as well.
That story's going well on top of it. But this is, too, a depleted Raw roster, and I can see how some are a little, like, checked out until a lot of the big stars come back on top of it. But I would say those are the two stories going through. And you got a really excellent match tonight with Braun and Dragunov.
And potentially Ricochet's final appearance.
That's right. That's right. Mm. Okay, well, let's go. We'll open it up to Super Chats and go to forum.postwrestling.com where you can always leave your thoughts after each show.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com. Shall I start, John?
Sure.
Let's go to Matthew in England who says, another solid WWE Raw tonight. I believe I read this weekend that Ricochet's contract expires in July, but I could be wrong. That was about as violent as you can get in a PG WWE to write him off, especially the callback to the WCW spot with Ray. Can't wait to see this guy wrestle Ospreay. It has to be at Wembley, in my opinion. Man, Ospreay's got like 10 different matches at Wembley. Could be. They could do Ospreay versus Ricochet at Wembley. Yeah. We're kind of really getting ahead of ourselves, though. Tony needs a reasonably big signing from WWE to bolster his company, and I think this will be that. The JD stuff with Liv is intriguing, but my guess is WWE will do the obvious finish this Saturday, which will be Punk screwing Drew again to set up the SummerSlam match. Do we have any update on Rhea and how her recovery is going? This seems like a slow burn with Liv and JD, which is buying time until Rhea can come back.
No, just that she was recovering. It wasn't anything where she was undergoing surgery. So it's, I mean, you know, I'm sure SummerSlam is the show that they are hoping for a lot of these names to be back that are, that if they can make it, that would be kind of what you're shooting for. I don't know how far you can hold off with Liv, but the Dominic stuff does extend this because it's not like she has a ton set up in terms of challengers on the show until everyone knows that the match is Rhea. So you can throw someone in there, but it's really just a challenger to keep Liv busy. And I would rather her be kept in some of this other storyline stuff because I think it's like she's not on this card on Saturday and you haven't built up anyone else. We go to Jeremy in Texas. Solid episode before TLE. I certainly didn't have multiple speaking segments for Scarlett on my Raw bingo card. I've really enjoyed the Braun Breaker main roster build thus far. They've really made him feel special. Probably the best build of an NXT call-up since Finn Balor became the first Universal Champion. We got the Ricochet write-off, but did we also get the Samantha Irvin write-off as well? I don't think you just go to the hospital and disappear by being a plus one. With Drew and Priest likely going on last Saturday, where do they slot AJ versus Cody? I would not put it in the opening slot. I never like when they do that with the title matches. I think you could do them like back to back at the end of the show. I mean, it doesn't really matter where you put that one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would also suspect Drew to close. And I think you could put Cody and AJ anywhere. I don't think it would diminish any sort of heat from Drew versus Priest. All right, let's go to Muggin, who says, Toledo was tepid, and they only mustered a This Is Awesome chant during Braun and Ilya, which was his match of the night. Drew was nudged into a babyface light, at least for this week. Gable continues to manipulate Otis. Liv continuing to stir the pot with Judgment Day, with that hotel card being the MacGuffin, and Ricochet got the Poochie treatment by that rabid Braun Breaker. If you know, you know. Tonight makes me glad that they're going to be in Scotland for 2 days. I know Dom is fighting temptation. I also hope that the powers that be don't succumb to temptation of having Drew lose on home soil. No sing-alongs, please. Oh, do we get Oasis?
Oh, that would be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe they'll sing "Don't Look Back in Anger" if Drew snaps, and
that's what he sang last time.
Yeah, it could be. Last one here is Ani. Very good episode of Raw. This is the show that's currently telling the best stories across the board. Can't wait for CM Punk to add a main event flavor to it by feuding with Drew McIntyre. So there you have that reaction. It's a lot of the big programs on Raw. It's waiting for Punk to come back for this feud. It's waiting for Rhea to come back for this feud. So, I mean, those are... That said, I can't say, like, I'm struggling to get through Raw each week. I think that they're... Like, this is also a pretty deep Raw roster that they have at this point. Like, I think there's a lot, like, I find these shows to be a lot more palatable than SmackDown at the moment, that feel like the wrestling is really chopped up, and you have the Bloodline story, but I wouldn't say, like, that's really kind of, you're introducing that story and it's not getting to a place where you're really sinking your teeth into it yet. I think that's all still to come, but, yeah, that's the state of things. Injuries affect things, and they've been hit with a lot of them, or people that are just taking time off. But that is going to be our time to say goodbye. Again, want to remind people, the State of the Wrestling Media Panel. It's coming to Toronto Saturday, July 6th, 2 p.m. Yuck Yucks at 240 Richmond Street West. Pick up your tickets right now, postwrestling.com/live. Panel will consist of the great Wei Ting, Stephanie Chase, Brandon Thurston, and Benno, coming all the way as the Grapple, WrestleNomics, Digital Spy, Post Wrestling Venn diagram comes into a fully formed picture on July the 6th. So we hope to see many of you there. Braden Harrington and Davey Portman will be hosting wrestling improv, as well as several of their wrestling-themed games that they are concocting. So hope to see many of you out there on the day of Money in the Bank. And Braden and Davey will be back Tuesday night with Up Next. And Wei and I, 11 p.m. Eastern time, it will drop in your podcast feed on the Post Wrestling Cafe, episode 2 of Who Killed WCW. So look out for all of that and a lot of great shows coming up this week on the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you in the door for tons of bonus shows each and every week, including the Ask Away Mailbag this week, Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course, and a whole plethora of shows coming your way. That's it for us. Thanks for tuning in to Rewind to Raw. Month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. postwrestlingcafe.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.